Well, we're in the beginning of a whole new phase of the pandemic with the new variant Omicron. It's now dominant. It's apparently less deadly, but there's a lot more of it. And last week at a press conference at Harvard, the scientists were saying that we might look to the UK to get a preview of what's likely to happen here in the US in the next week or two. The present situation in the UK and our probable future is the topic of today's episode of Follow the Science, an exploration of science, medicine, and medical misinformation. I'm your host, Faye Flam. I'm a science journalist and a Bloomberg opinion columnist, and this podcast grew out of a fellowship from the Society for Professional Journalists. My guest today, Muj Sevik, is a physician. She's an infectious disease specialist, and she's a lecturer at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. I first discovered her in late April of 2020 after she wrote some very early guidance about which places and activities were more risky for picking up COVID and which ones were less risky. And she did that by compiling a bunch of contact tracing studies. She also works with patients, so she has an insider's view on people suffering from severe COVID. So we started by talking about the so-called NPIs, that is non-pharmaceutical interventions, which include, of course, wearing masks and social distancing and the like. And we talked about the fact that there really isn't all that much concrete data, even now, on how well these work.
It's been a hell of a journey overall. But it's still ongoing, absolutely. But I think, like, of course, like, we're in a different situation compared to March 2020, but still, we're not really out of the woods yet.
There was something you wrote on Twitter that I thought was interesting and really important to discuss, and that was the non-pharmaceutical interventions and the fact that we don't have that much understanding of which ones work, or which ones are most important?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the main challenges, you know, because, you know, we don't necessarily know the level of benefit provided by different NPIs. So there's no clear-cut evidence, even, you know, with masks and, for example, like use of antigen testing. I mean, of course, like, they will have some benefit overall, but how much and at what point we need to implement which NPI is important. I think the most concrete data we have is about vaccines. We know that, for example, you know, vaccines cut down hospitalizations over 80-85%, but we don't have the same level of detailed data about, for example, antigen testing, or, for example, mask wearing, or reducing the number of people going to indoor setting, things like that. I mean, we are saying at the moment, yes, we need to do a combination prevention. I agree with that. But on the other hand, we need to be very, very clear with the public what really we're asking them to do. Because, you know, we don't want to implement something that will have really small benefits. For example, like closing outdoor parks or, you know, kindergarten parks and things like that, which will have really low, low benefit.
Will they maybe have a negative benefit? Because if people aren't doing those safe outdoor activities, they might be having their friends over to watch TV in the basement instead.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we need to, you know, and that's the reason I wrote, like, it's been over 20 months and we haven't really resolved this until now. Even, for example, you know, in the face of Omicron, which is spreading really quickly, and I think we will see a really fast and sharp increase in cases like they did in South Africa. I mean, in the face of that, what really intervention is going to work? I mean, is it going to work? I'm not sure.
That's a good question. And one of the questions that a lot of us are facing is, are there settings where you really should wear a mask? And are there settings that are so dangerous that you probably just shouldn't show up in the first place? Because we don't really know whether a mask is going to keep you safe in the face of Omicron.
Exactly. I mean, I don't have answers to all of that. But I think at the moment, there are two things that will be very, very beneficial, I think. One is getting the vaccine, because I think given that it's spreading so quickly, I think it will basically spread through the population really, really quickly before we really get a sense of what's happening. And even maybe some of the interventions start kicking in. So when you're exposed, the most important thing is that you're vaccinated. And that basically reduces the risk of you getting severe outcomes. So, and we now know that I think boosters are providing additional benefits in terms of preventing infection. So that's really important. If you're offered, basically get the booster. And the third is, I think, like implementing antigen testing. So if you're basically attending any setting, doing the antigen test just before leaving the house, I think is going to be much more beneficial than wearing a mask. I'm not saying masks are useless, but I think, you know, if you're shedding a lot of virus in the environment, even if you wear a mask, there's still a risk. But at least, you know, if you self-isolate with a positive test, then that means that person is not going to be in that environment.
So in other words, right, ask people to take an antigen test before an event so that it doesn't become a super spreader event.
Exactly. I think so. And I think we're hearing a lot of super spreader type of events with Omicron. It kind of fits with, you know, really preliminary data, which I also shared yesterday, showing that Omicron is actually multiplying really quickly. Obviously, that needs to be shown in much more kind of clinical data, like clinical patient samples. Those are the studies done in the lab. But, you know, it kind of gives us an insight that it's probably much more infectious. So, and intrinsically much more infectious.
She's talking about some laboratory studies that show that this virus multiplies 70 times faster in tissue from the upper respiratory system compared to our previous variant Delta, but it multiplies a lot slower in lung tissue. And that might be good news. At least the news could be a lot worse. It could also be multiplying itself faster in lung tissue as well. It may help explain why we're getting some reassuring news from South Africa that they're not seeing the kind of massive surge in hospitalizations or death that we would have expected from a similar rise in Delta cases. And their wave of Omicron might actually be leveling off and falling now. And so in some ways, some of the studies that we've done for Delta might not exactly apply.
So I guess like there are certain things that you can implement to reduce the risk, but knowing that it's never going to be zero. But I guess like the other aspect is, as I said, you know, I think eventually we will all get infected, unfortunately. But this is the sad and sad reality. I mean, when I say eventually, either now or probably later. I think the challenge at the moment is that, you know, if we have a lot of infections at the same time, I think it's going to create a lot of pressure in hospital settings.
Okay. I mean, it also sounds like things are moving so fast with Omicron that in places that have a lot of cases, this could move really fast and the situation might even improve then in a couple of months. Are we seeing any leveling off in South Africa?
Yeah, so I think there's early data to suggest the cases are no longer rapidly increasing. So they've been seeing doubling time of 2-3 days. That's something similar we're seeing in the UK as well. So it's really, really rapid. Basically, I was not able to sleep like a couple of days when I saw that, you know, it was doubling every 2 days, basically. It's so fast. So it will probably come down really quickly as well. Like unlike previous waves, we will see sharp peak and a sharp decline. And probably this will happen so quickly because, you know, I think the number of cases and considering the number of people with immunity, it will come to a saturation point. And that's when the cases will start declining. And generally what we're seeing in the UK, and I think that's what might have happened in South Africa, you know, the initial age group, which is kind of leading to increased spread is, you know, 18 to 24 age group. And that's what we basically saw throughout the pandemic. You know, that's, you know, young adults, basically we start to see the increase in cases first. And then you know, cases spread to older age groups and then younger age groups later on. So maybe once it starts coming to the age and age group of like those who've been boosted, for example, it will slow down overall. We will see. But I think this time it will be really sharp peak, really quick decline. We won't really understand, you know, how this happened.
Since late November, there have been hints and observational evidence that this new variant, Omicron, is milder, that is less likely to make people sick enough to go to the hospital or actually kill people. And just this week, there were some new studies that actually made that claim more officially that came out just shortly after I had this discussion with Dr. Sevik.
Probably even the discussions about whether this is much more milder or not will basically come after we basically pass the peak. It's really challenging, I think, once you have a really transmissible variant.
So it seems like one thing that could help in the public messaging is to get across that this is something that we're not asking people to do, you know, for months and months, but for a short period of time, if you're in an area where we seem to be going up these sharp peaks.
Yeah, I think so. It's I think it was Trevor Bedford who've done some modeling and suggested that probably within 8 weeks' time, I think it was like a couple of weeks ago, we will see a peak that's around like mid-January, early February. But obviously it could, you know, it could differ from country to country. We've basically started seeing something now in Europe. And I think in Europe, we're going to see the peak around Christmas time. So yeah, I think this will happen really quickly. And maybe it could be the message that this is going to be a short time period. But I think the other important message is that, you know, people are still very, very understandably scared about getting infected. Yes, I think no one wants to get infected. But also, you know, once you're boosted, especially after the first primary doses, the risk of getting infected drops like 75%. It's not zero, but it's really, really low. And once you're infected, when you're vaccinated, the risk of you getting any symptomatic illness is really low. You know, the PCR positivity after vaccination, those breakthrough cases may not necessarily be, you know, severe infection or even infection that many will recognize. I think that's also important that, you know, we shouldn't be overly emphasizing the breakthrough infections, in my opinion, because some people have really short temporary PCR positivity. And that doesn't really lead to any symptom or any illness afterwards.
So does that include people that haven't had a booster or whose booster was recent and it hasn't really taken effect yet?
I think, I mean, for Omicron, we have very small data, especially in terms of clinical data. But it seems like two doses of vaccine, primary doses, only provides about 35% protection against symptomatic infection. So it's not necessarily perfect. I mean, it's not great.
I see. So you're better off. We're better off than we were last year at this time when we had no protection.
Yeah. I mean, just to mention that, you know, this protection, I'm talking about symptomatic infection, but we don't actually know the protection against hospitalization. So there's some early data coming from South Africa suggesting that, you know, even two doses basically provide around 80% protection against hospitalization. So I think the protection provided by two doses, especially preventing illness, is still substantial. And I think booster will add on to that. So once you're boosted, the protection against infection goes up to 75%. And potentially protection against hospitalization will go up further than 80%.
Here's where she talks about why she changed her view on recommending boosters for younger, healthier people. It isn't so much a change of heart as it is a reaction to a very different situation with a variant that is a lot more immune evasive. So that's good news then, that this rush to get boosters is probably going to help a lot.
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, I've been kind of hesitant in terms of boosters before Omicron, especially that you know, the protection against severe disease hospitalization is still very much sustained with two doses. But Omicron kind of changed my mind, because if you have really high infection rates in the community, you know, your risk of being exposed increases significantly. And once that infection reaches vulnerable populations, like especially elderly, immunocompromised, those individuals, then even with two doses or three doses, may not actually have the same level of protection compared to a healthy individual. So once the infection reaches that population, really clinically vulnerable population, then you can still see high, you know, rates of hospitalization. So yeah, I think boosters will be very, very important. I think that's the most sensible action at present.
Is there any data from hospitals that can give us a sense of who's getting hospitalized right now? Are they people who refuse to get a vaccine? Or if they're people who are vaccinated, are they immunocompromised? How did the infection end up getting to them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it might differ from country to country, but I could give like an insight from the UK. What we're seeing is the majority of hospitalized individuals are actually vaccinated, but our vaccination rates are really, really high. You know, especially over the age of 65, our vaccination rate is like around 90-95%. And we also started booster program in September on an age basis. So majority of over the age of 65s are also boosted. So that's the reason majority of hospitalized patients are vaccinated. But when we look at ICU admissions, intensive care admissions, we're seeing much more unvaccinated. So it's really interesting. Like basically, yes, we're seeing much more vaccinated people being admitted because the majority of, you know, population is vaccinated.
Right. Almost everybody over 65 is vaccinated.
Yeah, exactly. But when it comes to ICU, basically vaccines help us to avoid ICU admissions.
She told me about some reassuring news out of South Africa. It turns out that a lot of the patients who are officially hospitalized with COVID there didn't actually come to the hospital because of their COVID. They came there for other problems and then turned up positive in routine testing. Is there a way to test people in the hospital to see, coming into the hospital, to see if they have Omicron or Delta? And could that give us some insights?
Yeah, I mean, I think majority of hospitals, at least here, test everyone on admission. And also we repeat the test 24 hours later. It's basically to reduce the risk of nosocomial infection. But I think it's a good idea. And I think in South Africa, what they've seen is that, you know, incidental positives were really, really high in the hospital. So basically patients get admitted for another cause, like with abdominal pain or, I don't know, like gallstones or something like that. But they basically are positive and they don't have any symptoms. So I think 70% of hospitalizations in one single center study show that they were all incidental.
In the UK, the situation is pretty different, and that's partly because they were still in their Delta wave, as we in the US are, when the Omicron wave hit. So a lot of the people in the hospital there are pretty sick, and the pattern is more like what it's been over the earlier parts of the pandemic.
So these are all interconnected. And what we've seen, for example, some studies in Scotland shows that half of the ICU admissions are actually coming from low-income families and intensive care units situated near deprived areas are much more likely to be full for a prolonged period of time. And also mortality rates are much higher as well in those areas, even after adjusting for age and sex. So I think this basically makes it much more important to reach out to those families, especially living in crowded households, living in multi-generational households as well, and also those working in high-risk settings, you know, warehouses and food industry, jails, you know, nursing homes as well. Like those are the people that we should reach to.
Do you think people should cancel their Christmas and New Year's parties?
I mean,
I don't know. Everybody's wondering here.
Yeah. I guess like it's, I mean, I would limit the number of people you're seeing. I guess like, you know, people could potentially still have like a small kind of family dinner, I guess, like, especially, you know, if everyone is vaccinated and boosted, for example. And if those are the people you're seeing, you've been seeing for some time. And I guess like doing antigen testing beforehand will reduce the risk. I mean, to be honest, I'm a bit hesitant to say don't do it.
And I know I should let you go. Maybe I just have two quick questions. One is whether there's anything I haven't asked, and also whether you have ideas for what our goals should be when, you know, you say, well, we need to think about what our goals are in the pandemic. What would be a reasonable goal given what we're facing with Omicron?
I mean, I think, yeah, it's to be honest, really challenging. But I think first and foremost, it should be to reduce disease burden. I think instead of, you know, trying to prevent every single infection, and now we have really good vaccines, they basically prevent symptomatic illness up to 75% and, you know, hospitalization more than 90%, which is really, really great. You know, I think some of the breakthrough infections will happen. You know, I think we need to accept that. And there's no way that we can now stop infections being circulating. So the much more realistic way of looking into it is that, you know, we need to accept that, yes, this will continue circulating in the community, but it's not going to be a big threat anymore. Because, you know, we won't see necessarily huge hospitalization numbers. So those are the things I'm thinking about, because like 2 years into the pandemic, I think public has done a lot in terms of, you know, complying with a majority of public health measures. But if you're asking people to do certain things for a prolonged period of time over and over again, you will lose the trust and, you know, they will disengage.
So I think the forecast for the U.S., based on what we're seeing in the U.K., is a little bit uncertain, but also a little bit reassuring. It looks like the fact that we have this big wave of cases might not lead to the huge wave of hospitalization, suffering, and death that we saw in previous surges of the pandemic, and that may be because so many of us are immune through vaccination or through getting the virus or some combination. And looking further forward, it does seem like there's a consensus now that this virus is not going to go away. It's going to become what scientists call endemic, one of those viruses that we deal with year after year, like flu and colds. And when that change happens depends a lot on us, on our technological advances, including vaccines and treatments that keep people from becoming sick enough to go to the hospital. And it also will depend on our attitudes, on when we're sort of ready to try to treat the virus as something that we need to live with.
Thank you for listening to Follow the Science. Follow the Science is produced by Faye Flam. You can follow Faye on Twitter at Faye Flam. That is F-A-Y-E. F-L-A-M. Today's episode was edited by Seth Glicksman, with music by Kyle Imperator. If you liked today's episode, we'd really love it if you left us a positive rating and review wherever you listened. Thanks in advance, and we'll see you next week.